Hello, welcome, and thank you for listening to Headcanon. Right now, you are listening to our old Danger Explosion feed, which is great for the most part, but I do want to let you know that you should follow the Headcanon feed on whatever your preferred podcatcher is due to the limited storage we have on our Danger Explosion podcast host. We only have a limited number of episodes up, and we can't host an episode every single week to our Danger Explosion feed. If you follow the Headcanon feed, you will get our entire back catalog of Headcanon episodes, and you will also be notified every week when a new episode drops. So be sure not to miss out. Follow the Headcanon feed on your favorite podcatcher.
Want to play a game? Do you like scary movies? Do you want to eat some brains? Is your chainsaw arm groovy? How bloodthirsty could a talking plant be? Eat your liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Come play with us forever, cause down here we all float. I never drink wine, so you're gonna need a bigger boat or a throat to choke. Whether you're in the prim or dairy, got red rum where you bled from, put your dead son in a cemetery. It's him or Carrie. Be very afraid, you'll be our number one fan and get carried away. All work and no play, you know it always means you're in trouble, son. I came to chew gum and kick ass and I'm all out of bubble gum. What if Quint killed Jaws' father? What if the Blob's body was marijuana? What if the leprechaun got a job as a bank guard? What if the wolfman had a cowbell instead of
every
nards?
Scary movie made since Oscar Wilde was writing letters. Headcanon to watch them all and tell you how to make them better. So put your earbuds in and forget what you're planning. It's time to take our heads and shoot them out of a cannon.
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 Of a cannon,
shoot 'em out of a cannon,
shoot 'em out of a cannon,
shoot 'em out of a cannon,
head cannon,
head cannon,
head cannon.
Welcome head to head cannon. Head cannon. Tonight we have a very special guest, Darkus Beasley. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing superb, Corey.
Excellent.
Nice to see you once again. Yeah.
Yeah, good to see you too. And for everybody listening, I know Darkus through IO and kind of the doing improv and stuff in Chicago. And normally I get a chance to talk to the guests a little bit before we start the show, but I have to hurry tonight and take my daughter to a volleyball thing. So we got off to a quick start. So how are you? It's been a while.
I'm doing great. I've had a pretty busy day. It's been one of those Mondays, you know. But yeah, I miss doing improv. I'll tell you that. I haven't done any since the pandemic really kicked in last March or March 2020. So yeah, I've been missing out on that. I had a baby.
Yeah.
I had a baby boy in June of this year. So I'm a new mom. That's been, you know, a huge, huge change, as you know, Corey.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been just doing the new mom stuff. I just recently went back to work, so I'm just kind of trying to figure out how that's going to work and jive with my mom life. You know, just doing a lot of mom stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And I know I was kind of talking to you about, like, back in June, because I wanted to try and get you on the show, and we were like, kind of trying to plan a date. And then you're like, you know what? I'm, like, very pregnant and probably going to have a baby, so maybe we should wait. So.
Yeah.
I just remembered something. Because Corey will, like, text me, like, a list of guests and movies and stuff. And, like, it's, like, the guest and then, like, the movie they want to watch. And I remember I texted him one night and I was like, dude, I'm on Amazon Prime and Netflix. What the hell is this movie called Darkus Beasley? Like, what is this movie? Because you hadn't chosen your movie yet. And so it was just your name.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? It doesn't exist.
Yeah. So I was like, no, Brent, that's a person. That's my friend Darkus. I know from, but then Darkus meet Brent. You guys met briefly, but Brent's a buddy of mine. We went to high school together and we've been doing improv together since I was like 15, you know, this. So,
all right. So yeah. Ancient friends.
Yes. We go way back.
I had a tummy ache this morning. I like left work early.
Oh no.
But I'm a teacher, right? I teach math and like we're at the end of what we call a term. So like and my students have they've taken their finals, so like I wasn't expecting anyone today. and a stomach ache. So I was like, whatever, like I'll just tough it out. It's not even a big deal. But like, I found out recently there's a garlic processing plant like right next to our building. And so like it regularly smells like roasting garlic.
Oh, and you're, which is not a, well, and you're half vampire. So
that's right. Yeah. And it's not necessarily a bad, it's not a bad smell. Like I would rather it smell like a normal room, but like, but like today it was like, I had a tummy ache and then just this pumping of garlic in my classroom. Just like, I texted my boss, was just like, I'm going to go, man. I'm out.
I can't do this.
I can't sit alone in a room all day. Nice. I can do that at home. Tummy ache.
Well, as someone who was recently pregnant, Darkus, I imagine you can probably, sympathize with. Did you have any like weird smells or anything that set you off, or?
I mean, just my sense of smell being on like hyper mode for a good chunk of time was enough to like send me over any smell. Really, it could have been floral, meant to smell really nice, but to me, it just didn't sit with me right. You know, the fish in the microwave of the the house type of situation was always just kind of nasty. It was just, you know, just think about that times five and then race your butt to the toilet to do some bomb jobs. So that was definitely not my favorite part of the pregnancy stuff, but you know, I didn't have nausea too bad. I wasn't nauseated too many days, but yeah, the smells were intense. In the same note there, it was also nice because whenever I would go outside for a walk or, you know, whatever, it was really awesome to just kind of smell the earth.
Really like weird, in a way you right? never but have before.
It's so nice.
Smell the nice. Earth. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and my youngest is 7 and my wife's pregnancy nose has never fully gone away. Like she still feels like she has a heightened, like kind of superhero sense of, and it's not like it went, the nausea from like bad smells went away. But she still has this kind of like there was one time I came home from work. This is when she was pregnant with our first kid. I came home, gave her a hug or whatever. And she like sniffed me and she was like, did you have a donut and a Pepsi today? And I was like, yeah, you fuck? Fucking weirdo. Like, you know,
that's, oh my God. That's not something luckily that I'm dealing with now. I do have it wasn't really pregnancy ears or pregnancy hearing or anything. I didn't have a good sense of hearing when I was pregnant, but now I do. I feel like anytime my son is shifting in his crib or, you know, if he's in the other room taking a nap and I hear the slightest rustle of blanket or, you know, fabric or whatever,
yeah.
I hear it. And everybody's like, oh, I didn't even notice. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Supersonic hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You have like the most adorable cupboards above your closet or whatever. Is that where you keep your baby? What is that? What goes in there?
It's actually, when we rented the place, they actually advertised that as baby closets.
Oh, nice.
So, yes, that's exactly where he is right now. He's taking a nap up there, and we've got a couple of security things up there so it doesn't roll out, you know?
Right.
It's a good space. It's
right,
good,
and you'll hear him nice if he does space. Move, so.
I like to picture, like, the airplane emergency slide coming out, and then the baby just rolls down.
Just
inflates.
His first words were, "Wee!"
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Well, Darkus, do you want to tell us the movie you've chosen to go? It's one of my favorite movies. I'm excited to talk about this movie. I love this movie. I always have. So,
yes, I picked this movie because I also love it, and it's very iconic. We chose Ridley Scott's Alien, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 1979's Alien, just a classic. A classic piece of horror, sci-fi horror. So yeah, just diving right into it. It starts off on the Nostromo. You know, they're off. They're basically like space truckers, right? And they're going, and then they all like wake up out of this cryo freeze, and their computer mother has woken them up because there's a beacon, like a distress beacon, coming from this planet. They've got to go check out. And then it all just fucking goes downhill from there. There's just no good after that. So
where does the cat go?
Who, Jones?
Yeah, like during cryo time.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it didn't really show up in one of the pods. I don't know.
At the end, it showed in the pod.
Yeah, at the end. She puts the cat into the pod, but I don't see it getting out of the pod.
Yeah. Maybe it was the one like running the ship and just like checking on things as they were all. Maybe that was the cat's job, was to like just watch stuff while they were all frozen.
Yeah, that fucking cat, man.
Yeah.
Right.
Although it wasn't much help. There was that scene where it was like, what was that guy's name? Harry Dean Stanton, the actor, who's great, by the way. He's one of the mechanics, right? When he goes looking for the cat and that alien like grabs him out of nowhere, and the fucking cat's just watching the whole time. It's like, meow. It's like, fucking do something, Jonesy. Like, damn.
Right.
The alien doesn't really.
Yeah.
The alien doesn't go after Jonesy at all.
No.
Well, it doesn't. But then there's this point in the middle of the movie, towards the end, where Jonesy's in a cage. Ripley's trying to take the cat onto the shuttle with her and puts it in the cage, and the alien sees it in there and is kind of like almost gazing at it in a, I want to say like an endearing way, actually. It's a weird moment, but yeah, I think everyone expects the cat to be sort of impregnated with another alien specimen at some point throughout this whole thing, and it doesn't ever happen, which, I mean, is there something to be said about that? I think there may be, but yeah, I definitely think the cat throughout the movie is this, like, aloof, like, it's almost a comedic character, really.
Yeah. That's true.
And then the alien sees it, I think, as, like, a prisoner of the humans. It's like, ooh, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, kind of thing.
Maybe it thinks they're going to team up.
Yeah, there should be, like, a scene where it's, like, it's crafted this alien technology and, like, beholds it to Jonesy, you know?
That's funny.
Well, yeah, I think for the alien to be so driven by, I don't know, hostility throughout the whole movie, to suddenly be like, oh, I'm going to associate myself with this cat. Yeah, you never know.
Doesn't really line up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody... They had a whole, like, Coco's kitten scene, too.
This is getting off on a tangent, but I heard that there are a couple people, like, caretakers who worked, you know, wherever the zoo where Coco was, and they would, like, help take care of Coco, but they've, like, filed a sexual harassment suit against that organization, because I guess, apparently, from what I read, Coco the gorilla was obsessed with nipples. Like, it had a weird thing with nipples, which, whatever, it's a gorilla, like, who doesn't? Right. And B, it's a gorilla. It doesn't know our social norms. But apparently the suit is more against the primary caretaker of Coco, who was like, hey, if you guys could, she really wants to see your nipples. Could you guys just show Coco your nipples? And they, like, felt pressured by essentially their boss to show Coco their nipples.
So now
there's a lawsuit, I guess.
Oh, God, that's...
That was
that like
in the 90s?
What's that? Well, Coco...
Is that a real thing? That seems so wild to me that somebody would use the gorilla as an excuse. I mean, do you think that's really what was happening? I'm pretty sure that that's what was happening. But
yeah,
it's just such an odd request.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like... I'd have to go back and look. I feel like the primary caretaker was... And not that... women are incapable of, like, sexually harassing people. But I feel like the primary caretaker was a woman. Now, I feel if it were a man, I would be more inclined to say, sure, buddy, you just wanted to see those nipples. But the fact that is, I'm pretty sure it was a woman from what I read, makes me more inclined to think that she was just so whatever with this gorilla. Like, she really just crossed the boundary, like, didn't recognize that there should be a line, and the gorilla just doesn't get to see everybody's nipples. Like, you can't ask...
Right, so... If you didn't show the gorilla your nipples, like, the behavior of the gorilla would be like, I want to see those.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like,
I guess. I mean, I don't know Coco, but...
Coco would start getting a little grabby.
Yeah, maybe. Getting angry. I don't know. Or maybe he would have been cool. Maybe they would have just been like, no, Coco, no nipples. And Coco would have been like, okay, I understand.
Yeah, signing. Coke was signed, right?
Yeah, like, no problem. I'm fine with that. Like, no worries.
Did you know that the size of your hand, if you're deaf and you speak sign language, the size of your hand is what your font size is
for sign. Ooh, that's a good one.
That makes
that's
sense.
A good one. Yeah. I read that today.
That's funny. Nice.
What if you have your nails painted? Is that like cursive or something?
Oh, that's, yeah. I wonder if you could go like I want Times New Roman, you know, or like just go like, can you do Arial font?
Right, and then you get called a basic ass bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Just like a neon sign.
Right. That's why I get letters on my nails. It just, on one hand it says basic, the other hand it says bitch. That's so.
Yeah.
Good.
So anyway, back to the movie. It's set in 2122. So when this episode comes out, because this is probably going to come out about January or so, it will be exactly 100 years in the future that the movie Alien takes place. So there's so much to love about this movie. What are some of your favorite parts about this movie?
Pretty much just the whole dynamic of the ship itself being this kind of rickety disc flying through space. It's not, you know, if we're looking at 100 years into the future, what a future to behold, right?
Right.
Like, this whole ship just looks like a garbage can smashed together with all kinds of hoses and metal, and it doesn't necessarily appeal to the senses. So I think that's really what kind of sets it in this like horror realm, right? It's a scary future. But I think beyond that, the characters are so bitchy. Like, they're complaining throughout the whole thing about, you know, how many shares they're going to get, whether they're going to get the shares. Mm-hmm. They're reluctant to go to the distress call and to do that job because they're really just trying to get home. I think there's this whole underlying theme of, you know, obviously capitalism being this like evil force in the world type of situation, still 100 years into the future. 100
years later,
yeah, there's a lot to it that's really awesome, really. It says a lot without being too complex at the same time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, because they're trying to get this movie made for a while, I think the script was bouncing around, but it was really the fact that Star Wars came out a couple years before this. And I think up till that point, like, most science fiction that where it was like humans in space, it was kind of the Star Trek Lost in Space, where it was almost kind of this like utopian, everything was like shiny and pretty. And, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't until about this time where you started getting this like dark, dirty, gringy, dystopian kind of future, at least in like mainstream movies and stuff. And I think it was Star Wars, you know, when it kind of hit big, they were like, oh, okay, yeah, we got this movie. We've got Alien. Like, let's go ahead and do this. And kind of jumped on it. But I agree that, because I think there were a couple writers who wrote the first version of the script, and then there were two other writers who kind of took over, and I know added, like, the whole Ash android subplot. Like, that wasn't in the first draft. And then you've got Ridley Scott, who came in as the director, and he certainly added his own spin, including, I guess, the entire fourth act, where, because the movie, in the script, it was supposed to end where she flies off on the shuttle, the ship blows up, happy ending, roll credits, right? And Ridley Scott was like, no, what if she gets on the shuttle and the fucking alien is on the shuttle? So that, like, that was all added, you know, at the end of the... So I think there are a lot of ways you can interpret this and what the movie's trying to say. And I don't know that any one interpretation is more valid than another, because there were so many cooks in the kitchen on this, you know?
Yeah. It's really a pastiche of a lot of different things. You know, the whole postmodernism type of vibe for sure. But on top of that, Corey, the collaboration and just the various ideas coming together and kind of molding it into what it is, it's interesting that, you know, after watching this, and, you know, there's obviously a lot of analysis based off of this movie, and there's a lot of inspiration that went into it and that came from it in the world of horror, but especially in the world of sci-fi. I think it's really interesting that it didn't really seem to have such a stable beginning, and that really, you know, I guess pure type of start to finish type of thing. I think it really evolved into something that maybe they didn't even imagine it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, and I just wrote, not that, that it doesn't really matter, but I thought it was so interesting. Like, one of the guys who wrote the original script, what is this guy's name? O'Bannon? Dan O'Bannon. He was like, I guess in an interview, he was like, I didn't steal Alien from anybody. I stole from everybody. And then, so there's like a list of movies I just wrote down because I was interested in it. But The Thing from Another World in 51, it's like professionals working a job pursued by an alien kind of in a claustrophobic environment. Forbidden Planet in 56, you know, they're warned not to go to this planet. And then they're killed off one by one. Planet of the Vampires in 65. Heroes discover a giant alien skeleton, you know, similar to the space jockey they find on the planet LV, whatever it is. So I think it's interesting how he combined all of this stuff that he had seen in other movies and he took from other places. And then, you know, you get it in the hands of Ridley Scott, who has, of course, he's a great director and it looks beautiful and he has his own take on it. But then also another component is obviously the art of H.R. Giger, and which added a whole, I mean, the whole movie looks like one of his paintings. So it's, I mean, so many different variables coming together to create this thing that I feel like was probably pretty new at the time, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think that the alien in and of itself was, I mean, looking throughout, you know, historically horror movies or sci-fi movies, even in 79, earlier in the 70s, later in the 80s, really didn't kind of compare to that aesthetic because it was so, I don't know, just scary, really.
Right.
There's so many things about it that, you know, it's not really ever seen in full, and you really only get these flashes and this like kind of metallic, organic, watery type of visual with it and bits and pieces. So I think the mystery of it really adds to the fear of the movie. But yeah, it's definitely iconic. The whole costume. I guess there was a guy who actually wore the costume for the filming of the movie who was like 7 feet tall or something like that. So
right, like 100
I think that's
pounds.
Just so cool. Yeah, it's like, you know, you see stuff like that happen, and like there was a movie on Amazon that I saw advertised. I think a friend of mine who's really into like B, C, D horror movies told it to me. It was like some preacher's like fighting a dinosaur.
Oh, okay.
Is it yeah. Velocipastor?
Yes, Velocipastor. That is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I actually, I you know, put that on and kind of waited for it to really get to a point where I was like, all right, I can watch this. And I didn't really get to that point, but I did find humor in the whole, like, first of all, the graphics and the way that the cover of the movie is designed is in no way, shape, or form anything like what is presented in the film, which is fucking hilarious.
Right, yeah.
But the dinosaur is like, yeah, it's just kind of like a Barney, really. So, yeah. Anyway, if you haven't seen Velocipastor, definitely dig into it a little bit. It's definitely funny. But, yeah, I don't know. I forgot where I was going with that, honestly. But, yeah, the Velocipastor got stuck in my head there for a second.
Well, for some reason, and we've talked about this because we've already covered Jaws, we've already covered The Thing, but for whatever reason, those three movies kind of hang together for me. Because they all came out at about the same time, and they all have this, they're all very effective, because in Jaws and Alien, you don't really even see the creature. I think the alien has like less than 4 minutes of screen time in the whole movie, you know, and Jaws is, it's somewhere, maybe he has a little bit more, but you don't really see him until the end. And then the thing is a little bit different, because you really see it, but it shapeshifts, so it's different every single time, you know, so you never quite know. It almost doesn't have a form either, even though you get a good look at it because those special effects are awesome, but it doesn't really have a form because it's different every time, you know?
Yeah.
So
there's also like a ragtag group of guys and gals like that are gonna save the day too, you know? But
yeah.
Definitely in The Thing, for sure. Just like...
Yeah. Well, it's like both movies have this isolated group of people kind of off doing work for whatever reason. And so they're just kind of like part of the same type of class structure, I guess, in a way. But they're also, you know, it's kind of like being in a haunted house in the woods type of setup, which is why they're, you know, they're not just sci-fi movies, they're horror movies. Mm-hmm. They're one and the same really in that context. But yeah, the thing definitely creeps me out, mostly because I have this thing about like arachnids, arachnophobia and stuff like that. Like, I cannot handle creatures with like leggy legs. Right. And there's one part in the thing where the creature's like molded into this like creepy crab
from
type
the head.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Grosses me out.
Yeah. Gross, I can imagine.
Even for, I think it was what, 81 that movie was made, I was still like, wow, that's terrifying. I don't know. Yeah. I just can't deal with it.
Yeah. No, yeah, that, I think that movie still looks great. The Thing.
It does still look great.
Yeah.
I saw that. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I was gonna say, yeah, all three of those kind of also add like sort of like futuristic, like here's what computers will look like. Even Jaws. There's even like the Fish Finder or whatever. But even like with Alien, they did a good job with suspense in today's world. Which is like the alien is just like a blinking green dot on like a screen.
Yeah.
You know? And it is like even like, oh no, that thing's coming at him. Yeah. Freaking run with your flamethrower in like an environment with oxygen being pumped into it.
Yeah. Well, there was one point especially where it reminded me of The Thing, because Tom Skerritt, when he goes into Mother, you know, the character Captain Dallas, he goes in and he's like, what are my chances, Mother? And it just keeps saying, does not compute. You know, does not compute. Does, I was like, he needs the computer from The Thing, because in The Thing, you know, Kurt Russell was able to be like, or one of the other guys in the movie was able to be like, you know, what are the odds? What's going to happen if this thing gets free? And the computer in The Thing was like, certain death within 37 days, like the world will be.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, dude, that thing could calculate the odds exactly. Like the computer, the computer in Alien can't do shit. Like.
That's right. We were talking when we talked about it. We were like, oh yeah, Wilford Brimley, man, he got nose.
Yeah,
what's up?
Yeah,
yeah. They needed that, and that was that's like 1980s like setting. That whole ship, like Darkest, like you're saying, looks so like gross and run down. But then like the place that they stay in looks like the Holiday Inn of the future.
Right. Right.
You know, these pods look like a lotus flower or something.
Well, and
yeah. That whole chamber, the medical chamber, too, is like sort of a little more glitzy and glammy than the rest of the ship, which,
yeah,
I thought that was interesting.
Well, there's that one part, like when we talked about it a little bit earlier, but when Harry Dean Stanton goes and gets killed, when he's looking for Jonesy, he walks into that room, which there are lots of movies. Apparently, spaceships in the future have to have a room where there's like chains hanging down and water dripping. Like, it reminded me of have you seen Event Horizon with Lawrence Fishburne?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, apparently spaceships just have to have like a rainy chain room. I don't know what is that room for. Like, this is our BDSM room on our spaceship. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that's for.
All the time, like every like 20 minutes Mother the computer is like giving them like their black mold like update.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys, you really need to bleach the corners of that room, you know?
Bleach the corners of that room. That's just dripping out of Ash's face. Is just, he's not really a robot, he's just like smothered in black mold, just like pouring out of, oozing out of his pores.
Right.
You know, you mentioned Forbidden Planet, and I kind of had that thought too, that Ash, because of the liquid that spews out of his neck toward the end of the movie, it kind of reminded me of like the Robbie character, the Robbie robot from Forbidden Planet. It, you know, people asking it for specific things, whiskey, whatever. I can't remember exactly what comes out of that robot in that movie. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering, is that really just like the milk or something that is served to the crew members? I wasn't really getting why the robot had this like liquid girth coming out of it. It was just,
Well, and that,
and it reminded me of the Reanimator too, when its head is off, and what they did to like transition into like, okay, now it's Bilbo Baggins, like his face again.
You know? Yeah. Bilbo Baggins' head on a table.
Now that movie movie is also just so wrecked. Honestly, that there's one part of that movie that I can let like scrape from my mind, and it's where they take the head and they place it in between those that woman's legs while she's like on the medical table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who decided that that was going to be part of the movie?
Well, we talked about that a lot on our Reanimator episode. And
not a whole lot, Darkest.
Not a whole lot, but that guy's. I read that guy's wife was on set, and she walked off, and they like got divorced. Like that that scene ruined that guy's marriage.
Is what? Well, you know what? I can't say I'm not surprised, really, because it was like, you know, for. I mean, we live in this day and age where everything is so graphic and secular, but that was really, I mean, jarring for even for you know. My sensitivities now, which is,
Well, and we had this conversation on that episode, and I know the Evil Dead episode, and at least for me personally, it seems to be like other people too. Like in horror movies, you can watch people get like hacked apart and mutilated, and it doesn't seem to affect at least me as much as like for some reason, and we've talked about this as sexual assault. And I think that it's because that seems like it's something more realistic that actually happens to people a lot. And it's not as far removed from reality as, like, an alien bursting out of your chest. You know what I mean?
Right. But there's still so much symbolism with that, you know, with the whole facehugger part of the alien that's really raping Kane's face.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fact that the tentacles or the tail of the alien is like piercing. It's like, you know, very phallic. The head is very phallic. There's a lot of sexual visual there with the alien costume. But there's also that scene at the end where Ripley's kind of like stripping down and she's wearing like the smallest pair of white underwear
toddler-sized panties. Yeah.
And she's climbing into that spacesuit and you're thinking, wow, this is like, it seems like a classic horror move where, you know, like the scantily clad woman at the end is brutally murdered by this sexual phallic monster, right? But that's not what ends up happening. So it's kind of, I think it's interesting that the movie kind of takes that turn because there's so many horror movies where it's the opposite, it goes in the opposite direction. And I do agree with you that, you know, obviously sexual assault and all of that is such a prevalent thing. It really is something that happens very frequently in our world. So is it that jarring for people to watch? You know, is it really something that instills fear in people? I think yes and no for a lot of the reasons we talked about.
Yeah, I read that they purposely chose, is the character's name Kane? The facehugger?
Yeah.
That's his name, right? They chose a man to be that character to instill like a sense of uneasiness in men and male viewers as well, because they didn't want to go through the whole trope that's been run down all the time of just like, okay, it's a woman that this is happening to.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think,
and also on a lighter note, the facehugger, they wanted to initially spray paint it green, but then they had one of those moments like you were talking about, Corey, like at the end of the movie, like, hey man. But they were like, yo, man, it looks so much cooler just the way it is out of the mold. And so they left it its normal color.
Nice.
Whatever the plasticness is or whatever.
Yeah. That was a good decision.
Yeah. Yeah. It looked great. It was scary as hell.
They make hats like that now. You can buy hats on like Amazon where you're actually wearing the face hugger alien as covers your face in the winter. Yeah.
Really? That makes sense.
Yeah.
I bet that looks cool as hell.
It probably keeps your face warm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no. But like, the reality is you're just being raped by...
Right?
Like, you get into the symbolism. But no.
Merry Christmas.
I read a lot of interesting and opposing, because obviously there's a lot... I mean, Geiger's work, I think, is inherently sexual. I mean, the alien's head looks like a big phallus. I mean, some of his work is overtly sexual if you look at his paintings and... But I read a lot of different interpretations that I thought were all interesting. And I think, Brent, you mentioned the fact that, you know, they chose to have it, the facehugger on Kane and impregnate Kane. And I think that was for a number of different reasons. I think, one, a lot of horror up till that point was focused on, like, terrorizing women. And this movie, I think probably, especially at that time, and especially for men, got under their skin because it's, yeah, it's not only that kind of like assault and violation, but in a very sexual way. And like, not only are they being raped, but they're being emasculated by being impregnated. And I mean, if you pay attention, like the first four people to die in the movie, it's all of the white men die first. Right. And then Parker die. And like, it's not even like the two women are what's left. So anyway, one thing I was watching was pointing out how, you know, it really plays into, depending on how you want to read The Alien, it plays into fear of emasculation and even like homophobia. If you read The Alien as like an aggressive, like an embodiment of like aggressive, toxic masculinity, right? Assaulting these men. But it pointed out that anytime you see a man or anybody try to assert like a traditionally male role, you know, like when Parker wants to go after the alien, he's like, fuck, I'm going to go take that alien out. He gets killed. When Tom Skerritt's like, I'm going to go in the vents and sort this out. He gets killed. And even like,
and the voice of reason is Sigourney
the whole time. Yeah. And even like, and even playing into, and you could even read it as not just attacking masculinity, but even like typical normal quote unquote traditional gender roles is, you know, the woman who dies is, what's her name?
Lambert.
She dies and she's kind of falls into that, stereotypical role of like a screaming hysterical woman. Right. And
she's played that role a couple times too, by the way.
That actress?
I think it's the Witches of Eastwick, I believe is the name of the movie.
Okay.
Where she plays this like over the top, like crazy woman. And it's just, it does that same like sort of acting that she does like when the alien is like coming at her.
Right.
You know, like in this other movie, she's just like always like, ah! Like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I just thought it was so interesting. And even like Ash, when he, because he's fairly like out of everybody on the ship, which, you know, he doesn't, he out of all the guys, especially, he's a little more, not overly masculine, you know, and so when he goes to attack Ripley on this altar of pornography, there are like naked pictures on the wall, right? And he,
right.
And I think this is part of his character's like love for the alien and his like, you know, because he kind of holds the alien up. He looks up to the alien. I'm trying to think of a word, but I can't think of it. But so, in much the same way that the face hugger...
He admires the alien.
He admires it, yeah. In much the same way the face hugger attached itself to Kane and forcibly entered his mouth, Ash rolls up that magazine and tries to shove it into Ripley's mouth, not only like mimicking the alien in his admiration of the alien, but also like, again, filling this like aggressive masculine role. And once again, he fails at it. He gets his head knocked off for trying to fulfill that. So I don't know. I thought it was such an interesting, like you could read it as, you know, attacking masculinity or even attacking like, not attacking, but criticizing traditional gender roles even. Which I thought was an interesting read. And I want to, it's a YouTuber, a lot of these videos, it's a YouTuber named Max Teeth. And a lot of this stuff she was pointing out. But I just thought it was very interesting that, you know, you could read it a couple different ways.
Absolutely. I think there's kind of a position, too, between the two female characters, Lambert and Ripley, where you have the one with the more dramatic reaction, the classical screaming, and I would say even the more feminine of the two, posed against, you know, Ripley, who's more masculine. I mean, you never see either character wearing a dress, obviously, or, you know, up to the nines in terms of makeup and hair and all of that. So there's definitely this kind of masculine presentation with both of them, but more so with Ripley, that you get in this movie that I think isn't really done in a lot of other horror movies. I think there are a lot of other horror flicks where women are hypersexualized in addition to being, you know, scantily clad and dressed in dresses and very girly. And there's this femininity to it that isn't as prevalent within this movie. So I wonder if that kind of ties in, Corey, with what you were saying about the men being emasculated, and you know, there's this whole thread of sexuality and of gender throughout this whole movie that I think is really, it's super strong.
Yeah.
And it's only buttressed really by the art, the Geiger, the visuals, the alien itself, the ship. I mean, there's so much to it visually, and then within every scene. So yeah, it's loaded with that.
Yeah. Well, and some other stuff I read that I thought was interesting is they pointed out how the ship they go into on that planet with the space jockey in it, how it kind of looks like, you know, it's like U-shaped, like you could look at it as a pair of spread legs, and they enter through the middle, and it's full of eggs inside, right? But then also, another read I read was, like, not only is it, like, maybe playing into homophobia, if you look at the alien as, like, an aggressive masculine, but also that, like, the head is kind of phallic. I read that people describe the mouth as vaginal, the way it opens, and it's dripping, obviously, and then, like, but then the inner jaw comes out, which is, again, phallic. And so almost maybe even a transphobic read of the alien. But one of the videos I was watching pointed out that in the sequel, it's not textual in this movie, but in Aliens, the sequel, there's like a bio of each character when they're like briefing debriefing Ripley and she finally wakes up. And you can't really see it in the movie, but if you read a screen grab, it says that Lambert's character was a Despin convert, which doesn't mean, it seems like a fictional term in the world of the movie, but a male to female transition at birth. So, and I don't know why, it's not explained. I don't know what this means in the world of aliens and why, maybe she was born intersex and they just made a decision on her part, but it's textual in the movie Aliens that the character of Lambert is a male to female character who was transitioned at birth, which is interesting, you know, like why, yeah. what the meaning is behind that, you know.
I wonder if they made that choice just to kind of really incorporate the whole conversation back, you know, just tenfold to add it back into the conversation within the context of that movie. It's definitely unusual to hear that. I haven't seen Aliens in such a long time. So, yeah.
Right. Right.
Did you guys think it was really funny whenever they were done with Kane and then they just like ejected him out of the ship really fast?
Yes.
Like immediately it was like, okay, we're done with it. And then the next, it was like a smash cut and then it was like,
shoot him out of the face.
Dallas is like, does anybody want to say anything? And then no one says a damn word. Okay, deal.
Right, blast off.
Let's get this guy out of here. He's tainted.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. Yeah.
Sad, too, though. Sad.
Oh, it was incredibly sad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that guy, I didn't realize.
Oh, by the way, that guy is the same. The movie, remember the Mel Brooks movie Spaceballs?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I've never seen Alien until yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, when I grew up watching Spaceballs as a kid, my brother and I destroyed that VHS. And there's a scene in there's an alien that busts out of a dude's chest.
Oh my
God. And it's the same damn actors.
Yep.
Both of them. Hello, my baby.
Hello,
my darling. Hello, my ragtime gal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Send me a kiss for Hawaii.
Yeah. Yep.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that actor, yeah. John Hurt. He was also the professor in the Hellboy movies. He was like Hellboy's adopted dad. And he was Ollivander in the Harry Potter movies, for anybody who. But, But you may or may not. Do you remember Vine, the app that was around a few years ago?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
This was probably, what, 2013, 14, right in there. We created an account just as a funny thing for me to do with our kids where we would, like, recreate scenes from famous movies, right?
I remember this when you guys did this, yeah.
Yeah, so we just did all kinds of silly stuff, and it was mostly me and my two daughters because my son was pretty not born at the time, actually. But one of the movies we did was Alien, and we did the chestburster scene, and I had an old shirt that I had torn, and we had a Yorkshire Terrier, so I had my dog, like, come out of my shirt, right?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so, but as we were, like, making this video, I leaned back on our table and like, put my full weight on the middle of the table where the, what's the part you put in the middle? There's a name for it.
The leaf?
Leaf. Where the leaf goes, and the table just snapped in half. Just like completely broke onto the, totally snapped in half. But so
that's more like a Chris Farley moment.
Yeah, it absolutely was. But we put it back together. We screwed it back together. It's still the same table we have now. But I totally totally ruined it at one point in time. So.
Oh, that sounds fun. Yeah, I love that.
Which my wife loved.
Did you get the shot?
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, we posted the video. Yeah, yep. It was good. Yeah,
okay.
Worth it. Worth it.
is that somewhere? I'd like to see that. Do you have that saved somewhere?
I think I do. I'd have to look for it because Vine is not around anymore, but I think I do have the video somewhere.
Okay. I lost a bunch of mine. I did have a Vine account for a while, and I think I got like 2 videos from it that I took once upon a time. But yeah. Mine were all really stupid, so I'm not going to talk about any of those.
Well, we knew the end was coming, so we downloaded all of ours. They're somewhere. And this is kind of unrelated, but I kind of wanted to talk about, if anyone is interested, there's a board game that's not specifically Alien licensed, but it was done by this company, and the board game is called Nemesis, which I have it behind. I don't know if you can see it. It's this one right here. But it is a fantastic board game that really feels like you're in the movie Alien. Like, you all wake up in the middle, and you're trying to go, like, things are broken on the ship, and you're trying to go around and fix them, but there's, like, an alien stalking around, but you can't see where it is. And then you all have a secret objective. So, like, most of you will be trying to get the spaceship back home, but then there might be one of you who's, like, trying to sabotage it and, like, destroy the engines and shit. So it's a super fun game. I highly recommend Nemesis.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's like...
So if you're kind of like the Ash character, where you're trying to kind of take sides with the alien type of thing. It kind of sounds like One Night Ultimate Werewolf a little bit. Have you guys ever played that game?
Yeah.
Not to totally derail your story.
No, it is where you're like, there's potentially one person who's the traitor, and then the rest of you are all working to get home. Yeah.
Those games are fun. I love those games.
Those are like the pandemic games.
Yeah. Right.
You ever play those? Yeah. Play those with like friends? Like, yeah. My wife and I would do that.
But then there's also, I played video games all the time when I was a kid. But then pretty much after I moved out of my mom's house, I really just haven't had a lot of time to play video games. This was a year ago. Yep. And, so I love video games, but I never play them, but I did for a while played about halfway through the game Alien Isolation, which it's such a cool game. Like, you're this character. It's actually Ripley's daughter. Like 15 years after the first movie, she's like going and looking for the flight recorder from the Nostromo, and she gets to the space station and it's totally wrecked. She ends up there by herself, and she's like creeping through this dark, destroyed space station, and there's an alien running around. So it's not a lot of fighting. It's a lot of like sneaking around, trying to fix things and like avoid this alien that's trying to hunt you down. And, it's pretty fucking cool. And they got a lot of the actors, Sigourney Weaver, pretty much all of the actors, Tom Skerritt, Harry Dean Stanton, to come back and do voices for that game.
That's pretty cool.
In various recordings. Yeah, so it's a pretty fun game.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What else is awesome? Do you remember the TV show Alien Nation?
Yeah, I do remember that.
In the 90s, there was a TV show called Alien Nation, and it like felt like Grey's Anatomy. But, like, if Grey's Anatomy had aliens on Earth wearing business suits and, like, suturing you up.
And weird heads.
It's like a normal, like, TV drama, but, like, there were people with aliens with, like, weird heads.
Yeah.
I need to look into this. I actually was terrified of aliens growing up. We went to the theater to watch Independence Day.
Okay.
Which I was born on the 4th of July, so I felt particularly excited about the title of this movie. Went, watched the movie, and then slept walk for an entire week following. My mom told me that I had like these nightmares where I was just getting out of bed and like coming into a room and telling her that aliens were like in the kitchen. It's just like really crazy dreams about aliens. And
you're like, you know, jostling her a bit in her bedroom and saying, "Welcome to Earth."
Welcome to Earth, bitch. Pop.
Oh no, I didn't mean that you punched your mom.
No, punching was done. I did jostle her awake though a couple nights that week, and she said she was worried about me because I was talking in a way that made her think that I was awake, but I had no recollection of it the following day. So definitely terrified of aliens growing up. So I need to kind of recap on my 90s alien stuff. I've gone back and watched The X-Files quite a bit, so I can enjoy that now as an adult.
Nice. Well, I've told Brent before, but like 2012 was like, there was just a lot of death for me in 2012, right? So after that, like during that year and afterwards for a few years, horror movies or really anything with any kind of like realistic, believable death was like just not very, I wasn't interested in it. Wasn't something I was interested in watching. And then, so it's been, you know, in the past few years that's kind of worn off and I can once again, like, enjoy horror movies and enjoy, but yeah, so I don't know. I totally sympathize with 90s Darkest because yeah, there, sometimes you just don't want to handle shit, so.
That's absolutely, I mean, that's true to my life right now. I think ever since I had Dante, my son, almost 6 months ago, I've had this aversion to horror movies too, where I, you know, there's a lot of maternal characters, there's a lot of children involved in horror movies, there's a lot of physical harm that comes to those characters. And so it gives me this level of anxiety that I've never experienced before. So it's definitely,
it changes you.
Yeah,
it does. And it's wild. I never once thought while I was pregnant, like, oh, I'm not going to be able to enjoy horror movies in the same way. But it is true for some movies that I've seen since then that, you know, it makes me uncomfortable. It definitely plays on my anxieties as a mom. So I definitely understand, Corey, what you're saying about not being able to watch them for a while.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and especially movies where, like, kids get hurt or terrible things happen to kids. Like, that fucks with me a lot more than it used to, you know,
damn.
Like, yep. A lot more than it did, you know, 15 years ago, so.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
You guys actually horrible. Feel like you've changed your behavior while driving? Like, oh, I mean, this has been something that changed, like, you know, like 11 years ago for me, but like, I'm a totally different driver than I am before kids.
Yeah.
Everything is just so, like, I'm never in a hurry. Everything's just like, you know, they can go. I'm a defensive.
I still drive probably faster than I should a lot of the time. But but I am, I feel like I don't take risks like I would have when I was used to. Like, I'm not going to fly through a light that I don't know. I certainly take fewer risks than I did when I was younger, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Darkest, one time when we were in high school, we took the same route to school, like him and I. And I was driving to school, and I pull up, and it's Corey on the side of the road. His car has been broken in half.
What?
Yeah, torn in half.
A school bus had T-boned him.
Yeah.
No.
And just, like, tore his car in half.
Yeah.
And he was on the side of the road.
Right there.
Yeah. Everything in front of where I was, like, I had the steering wheel and the windshield, and then everything in front of that was over there.
It's like, were you okay? My God.
I was fine. I missed two periods of school while I dealt with that. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school now. Like, I don't.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was like, I just want the rest of my day to be normal. So I'm just going to go to school now. So.
Your poor mother.
Yeah. Yeah. but that's like the last serious accident I've had ever since then. So that's not. Good. Knock on wood, I haven't had any kind of accident in, I don't even know, 13, 14, 15 years, something like that. It's been,
good.
Yeah, I'm on a good streak right now, so hopefully that'll continue.
You better knock on some wood or something.
I know, right?
I work with a guy, and I'm just saying this like casually, like, yeah, some guy, but no, a physician, Dr. Bud Baldwin, DeWitt Baldwin.
That's a great name.
He is, I believe he's 99 years old now. He still works at the ECG&E's where I work, and he's still employed there and still shows up. And he told me in an interview, we were prepping to do a documentary about him and his work and his life. And in one of our interviews, he mentioned that he had recently, and this was, I think we recorded this in 2019 when we were still in the office, that he had recently gotten to a car accident at that point in time. And he told me that the last one that he had gotten into was in 1952. And I was thinking, good God.
That's a good run. God. That's a good run. That's longer than most people have been alive.
So. If you survived a car accident in 1952, you're immortal.
That's what happened.
I'm just so stunned that this guy, this man, is still working. He's, you know, and like contributing significantly to the organization. But he's got so many awesome stories. I mean, the car crash stuff is obviously not an awesome story, but. I mean, can you imagine like driving down Michigan Avenue, which is where our office is located, and then seeing somebody that looks like they're about 98 years old and just like, oops, he pulled out in front of me, and being like, why is this guy driving? But then finding out he hasn't had an accident since 1952.
Right. I'm like, God,
he's still gainfully employed.
Right. I hit a 99-year-old guy and somehow I'm the asshole still. Like, damn it.
Right?
Next week, we're talking about 2005's The Exorcism of Emily Rose. So be sure to check out that movie. Get caught up before next week. As always, you can follow us on social media, on Facebook at Danger Explosion Presents Headcanon Podcast, on Instagram at Headcanon Pod, on Twitter at Horror Movie Pod, and you can always visit the subreddit r/horrormoviepod.
Hey, y'all, I'm sorry. I hate to cut this short. I've got to take my daughter to volleyball. So I want to go around and do our headcanons real quick. I'll dive in, and then I'll go around and ask you for yours. Mine is just really quick and silly. I feel like, you know, this alien got in this guy's chest. And, I have to wonder, like, they didn't do any x-rays or anything. They were just like, oh, he's better. Let's invite him to dinner. How did they not know there's an alien in his chest? But okay, whatever. We'll glide right past that. But I feel like if only Donald Trump had been there in the future, I bet the alien could have been cured with ivermectin. Had they taken horse medicine and taken that, that would have cleared the alien right out. They would have drink a little bleach, take a little ivermectin. You're fine.
Just shine some light in your body.
What's that?
Just shine some light right inside that body.
Shine some light in that body. Yeah, and no, the alien goes away. It's no problem. It's like it's no problem. Just disappears. Clears right up.
Right? Better by Easter.
Be better by Easter. Alien's gone. No acid blood anywhere.
Oh, God.
All right.
Mine was really short and not really very significant, but And upon watching Ripley put the cat into the pod at the end, I was imagining that there was some type of pit orchestra playing the soundtrack to the movie throughout the whole film, and that she's just handing the cat to like the conductor at the end, because it disappears in a weird way, and so that thought crossed my mind. But then to the fluid coming out of Ash, I was thinking, is that the milk that the crew has been drinking this whole time, and now they're gonna be thirsty, you right. know, just a couple of ideas that popped up.
They're like, has anybody milked Ash today?
Right?
Has anybody milked Bilbo?
He's gonna shove a magazine down your throat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of thought about like the ending. Instead of like self-destructing the ship, like Ripley gets in the pod and just like goes. Mm-hmm. Right? Sure, Jonesy's been infected and is going to wreak havoc on wherever Ripley goes. But the alien is still in the ship. And what I was imagining was that, like, the whole time, the alien has sleep apnea. And is just really cranky and really tired. Like, you know, like, the big, like phallic wiener that is his head. It's not really his head. It's a CPAP machine that he has to wear. And he's got this, like, erector set. You know, like right. charging cord that comes out.
See, no, he was.
And, you know, there's like scenes.
Well, he'd have to have like a tiny CPAP for the inner jaw, and then a bigger CPAP to go over the outer jaw. Right?
There's so many, so much head gear.
Double CPAP.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and so, like, I think there'd be, like, some funny scenes of him, like, walking around the ship, like, trying to get a good night's rest, but, like, but his body is not, like, the appropriate size for, like, the pods.
Right.
And then Jonesy is, like, has been using it as, like, a litter box. Kind of thing. It does look like a futuristic litter box, you know? And it's just, like, him just being curmudgeonly, like, you know, like, the odd couple almost between him and Jonesy, you know?
I'd watch that TV show.
Surviving until they... What?
I'd watch that TV show, The Alien and Jonesy, yeah. As the odd couple.
The odd couple, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. Well, I got to get going, y'all. I wish we could stay and talk longer, Darkest. It was always a pleasure. Are you frozen? Are you still with us?
Yeah.
She's gone. Well, we'll say goodbye to her later. This has been Headcanon.
I didn't know. I thought she was just sort of sitting there for a little bit.
Frozen right at the end. That's okay.
All right. I'll see you. Have fun at volleyball.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.